Hi, I'm Aislinn Antrim with Pharmacy Times. Welcome to Psychedelic Pharmacy, where we take a look at one of the fastest growing markets in healthcare, psychedelic medicine. This month, we're back with part two of an interview with Kelsey Ramsden, co-founder, president, and CEO at MindCure, about the Desire Project and the potential use of MDMA-assisted psychotherapy for the treatment of women with hypoactive sexual desire disorder. In an interview with Pharmacy Times, Ramsden said sexual health is directly linked with mental health, and both issues are often under-investigated in women. Just a quick trigger warning, this episode does deal with issues of sexual trauma. How could a history of sexual trauma play a role in the occurrence or the severity of the symptoms of hypoactive sexual desire disorder?
Well, I think, you know, there's this interesting thing around this word trauma that we use. So some people will use phrases like big T trauma versus little T trauma and all these kind of things. What we know to be true is that every individual holds experience in a different way. So in the same way, let's oversimplify it. Let's say you see a child wipe out on their bicycle and they skin their knee. Some children wail like it's the end of the world and they're dying and oh my gosh, I can't go to school tomorrow. Other children get up and dust themselves off and go, nothing happened. But their leg is broken and you're going, something's happened. This, you need help. You know, there's a wide variety of how people respond to these kind of unexpected events. And none of it is to be judged, in my opinion. Neither one of the child who, you know, reacted in a certain way versus another is right or wrong. That's their own interpretation of the experience and how they can hold that. So when we're talking about sexual trauma or negative relational experience as it relates to sex, we span a large body of work. And for one woman, a certain experience may be received very differently than for another woman. And that can also be informed by cultural context, you know, the way that you grew up. The way that you either, whether it's religion or value set, or it's such a nuanced and complex space. So I wish I could say to you, well, if someone grabbed your breast when you were 13 years old and it was unwanted, you're going to get trauma that relates here on the scale at, you know, 3.275. That is not how it works. And I think every human knows that to be true, not just women. So how does this then relate to the severity? It is very much dependent, if only on how we hold it ourselves. But we do know naturally that when you have, say, tremendously severe experiences that are repeated over time and that happen very young, those can be the most destructive. You know, there's no avoiding that. And to the degree to which that can affect an individual, of course, is amplified. But unfortunately, I can't give you a nice, tidy answer that says, here, if this happened to you, here's how bad it's going to be. Because we can have people who were never touched, but were threatened for years. And that can be just as severe as someone who had one single incident of unwanted advances. Just so much depends on how that impacts the individual.
How might the opportunity for MDMA-assisted psychotherapy shift the conversation around the treatment of women's sexual desire disorders?
Yeah, I think, you know, even conversations like this, like here we are, two women on effectively a scientific drug development health podcast interview series talking about our own sexual health. Like, this is pretty radical, if we're honest. This is not, you know, rewind 20 years or 30 years, this would not have been a thing that happened. So I think it's exciting and it's an interesting part of the work. And I think the the thing that I've noticed over, say, the last month, and, you know, talking about this more, is how curious the men are. There's a lot of men who go, so you're telling me that when she says it's not you, it's me, sometimes she means it. You know, that maybe it's not the other partner. Maybe it's something that's going on for the woman herself. Like, there's all these interesting little parts of our culture that are being questioned and that we can explore. I don't know. Did you ever see the movie When Harry Met Sally? It's kind of an old movie. So there's the most famous scene from When Harry Met Sally, and Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal there, and Meg Ryan fakes this orgasm. And he's looking at her like, how is this possible? And that's another big part of this conversation that I'm having a lot, which is interesting, which is this idea that there's a whole culture around women faking orgasms. There's a whole culture around how we go into these relationships and we may adore our partner, but not have the spark of desire. And that might not be, it may not be them. It may be legacy. You know, my little bit of baggage I brought from my life's history of being a woman in this world. So there's a lot of conversations to have on it. I'm glad that we're having this one. But I think it's equally an important part of the work so that women don't brush it off. Because sometimes we go, oh, this is just the part where we've been married for 5 years. And yeah, or this is the part where I'm so focused on my career and I'm busy and I'm under stress. We brush it away and we brush it away. Whereas men tend to not put up with things for quite so long. They tend to go, there's a problem here. It involves my relationship. It involves sex and my connection. I'm going to figure this out. And culture has said, gals, after you're past 30, you've kind of done your part, you know, which is not true. And so that's the interesting part of this conversation to me, is allowing women to go, hey, yeah, right. Sex doesn't stop at 30. Desire and connection to self shouldn't stop then either, whatever the number may be, right? Just because society doesn't have this idea of women experiencing desire after that point in any other context than like, ooh, that's out there. So I, as much as sometimes it's uncomfortable, not for me, but for folks, I love having this conversation. I think it's important. I think it's timely.
Well, finally, what are your hopes for the future in relation to how research into women's sexual desire disorders is conducted and approached?
Well, my hope is we get to a phase 2 study that shows good numbers and the data comes out positively. I think, you know, of course, we wouldn't be investing in it if we didn't think it was going to go that way. Our team is world-class all-stars. They know precisely what they're doing in this arena, both with the MDMA and the psychotherapy and the sexuality and the desire component. I mean, my great hope is, you know, 5-6 years from now, this therapy is normalized. And I'm just as happy to go to, you know, my Friday night drinks with my girlfriends and openly say, oh my gosh, you know, I haven't been feeling into it for a while. I went and did this and it transformed my connection to myself and my partner. And oh, I'm alive again, ladies. And they go, where did you go? Tell me about that. And they go. And that this is not only available for the women who've experienced just the worst things or who are struggling the most, but for people who want to experience more of a deep connection, you know, experience the richness of desire in its fullest extent. That's what I hope. I mean, I hope we have legions of women who are all going, thank heavens that someone and a group of people believed enough that we were worth the time and money and conversation to live these kind of full and rich experienced lives and unlock desire. I mean, I can't wait to see it.
In addition to the modern research around psychedelic medicine, the history of medicine is full of fascinating findings and alternative approaches to both medical practice and drug research. Each episode, we will explore a historical approach to medicine that, despite its sometimes odd or bizarre nature, remains foundational to modern developments in the field.
Treating mental illness has been a challenge for medical professionals throughout history, but one common cure was bloodletting. in 17th century France, a physician named Jacques Ferrand wrote a book about cures for the mental ailment of heartbreak. He noted specifically that bleeding the broken heart to the point of heart failure was key. Bloodletting has been applied to the treatment of numerous ailments throughout history, with the practice beginning in ancient Rome and continuing on through the medieval period. By the 18th century, the practice was adopted to treat the mentally ill in psychiatric hospitals. Around this time, the American physician and founding father, Benjamin Rush, wrote of bloodletting's benefits for the mentally ill. He described the method as, quote, heroic depletion therapy, unquote, which he recommended specifically for patients suffering from mania. To learn more about the history and treatment of mental illness, check out Pharmacy Times Mental Health Resource Center.
Thanks for listening to Psychedelic Pharmacy, a pharmacy-focused series. Tune in next month to hear more about the field of psychedelic medicine.